Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba. Welcome to the Lean 911 podcast. My name is Mark DeLuzio, CEO and President of Lean Horizons Consulting. And this is episode 31, and it's Lean Basics. And again, I am honored to have my friend and colleague, Hide Oba, who is the son of Hajime Oba. And if you want to find out a little bit more about his father and how he was a mentor to not only Hide, but to me, go to episode 30, if you haven't heard that. And we're going to refer back to episode 30 quite a bit, because a lot of the basics that I think Hide has been instilled in, and that's maybe a polite word, it came from the lessons from his dad, and who again was had a storied career with Toyota, and ended up in the end of his career with the Toyota Supplier Support Center out of Georgetown, Kentucky, which is where I interfaced with him when we were developing the Danaher Business System in the early 90s. So anyway, Hide, welcome. And you know, you and I talked a couple of weeks ago about the Lean basics and how we are divorcing ourselves from the fundamentals and moving on to all kinds of other things. And maybe you want to give a little bit of thought and comments about that and to kick this thing off.
Hi, Mark, and thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm super excited to talk about the basics, because that, like you said, is exactly what I learned from my sensei or my father, right. 20 years with him on the shop floor. Mm-hmm. Everything was related to basics. And, you know, a lot of people sort of come to him and ask this, what's the secret of Toyota? What's the secret of TPS? And, you know, he never said any answer, but if there is one, I will say they do basics, right? It sounds simple, but this makes a huge difference between any competitor, is they do basic things. And that's what I learned from him. And I'm super excited to talk about this, because not many people get excited about this.
Well, you know, I think what we find in the consulting world in general, everybody is trying to create the next silver bullet. I was just talking to a colleague of mine about a big consulting firm that came up with a software solution. And, you know, there's a lot of money in software, and there's a lot of people in our space that have come up with software solutions. And what it does, I think, is take you away from the basics, and it distracts you. And, you know, you and I talked about Vince Lombardi, the famous NFL football coach here in the United States, when he won 11 championships with the Green Bay Packers. And he was known for basics, the fundamentals of passing and blocking and tackling and all the fundamentals, right? And look what happened. He was probably the best coach in NFL history, winning all those championships. And the funny thing was, on his teams, I think he only had four Hall of Famers. Okay. And that's it. He didn't have a whole slew of entertainers, Hall of Famers. And his very first practice, you and I talked about this, Hide, he held up a football on his very first practice, and he said, "Gentlemen, this is a football." Okay. And then he moved on from there about all the fundamentals, all the basics. And today, everybody in our Amazon type world, pressed for time, is looking for the silver bullet, but they're not doing the basics, right? And you see that too in your consulting. By the way, Hide is a senior consultant with H&M Consulting, and he's based out of New York City, and hmconsulting.com, and we'll give that out at the end as well. So Hide, why don't you talk to us about what you have been taught as to what are the basics?
Right. And if I describe the basic, I will say it's standardized work. It starts with standardized work, and I think standardized work is the basic of management, basic of production, and basic of everything. And everything I learned about, how can I say, just lean or everything have to do with standardized work. I would say what 20 years ago I start working with my dad, and he always talk about standardized work. And when I mean by standardized work, it's not just, the task time, working process start, the sequence of work, the three elements of standardized work, or the standardized combination tables and work chart. Those are critically important. I really need that thing. But what my father meant by standardized work is a little bit more broader sense to say, well, first of all, it's not just the paperwork, the Gemba have to be according to the standard work. There should be no gap differences between this what's written on the piece of paper versus what's actually happening. That means people are following. That means the processes are designed according to the standardized work. There's no like different sequences, or the opera have some kind of mysterious motion that we do not describe inside the standard.
Mysterious motion. I love that word.
Yeah, because we do, right? And I've been to like strange places. Like, for example, one of my process was audited for 5S, and we got a bad score. And I go to the shop floor, and people was following the standardized work. It's just that some people did this 5S not according to the standardized work. They put like a palette mark or something in a completely different wrong location, the material location. And they thought that we are not following the 5S, or we changed it, but the 5S guy was auditing based on some kind of paperwork that doesn't match the real condition of the shop floor. And I was like, mad, like 5S is the shadow of standardized work. But that's how I learned. It's like 5S is not the king. I need to have standardized work, and then based on that, I decide my material locations and where the tools should be. And as long as they are following the standardized work, they will follow the 5S. And so I don't know what kind of piece of paper that they come up with, but don't evaluate based on this fake paper.
Fake 5S.
Yeah,
Well,
fake, I mean, yeah.
that's an excellent point, because I think a lot of the so-called tools, people have asked me, why isn't 5S on the Toyota Production System house? Because it's integrated, right? It's integrated, and you could put all the tools on the we did in Danaher, by the way, which I don't know, maybe that was a mistake, because every time I talk to somebody from Toyota, they never look at any of these things as individual tools, but more of an eclectic, like a Venn diagram. For example, you can't do standard work without cell design and without 5S and without visual management and without, Pokiok and, all. So all that stuff, right, has to be together in an eclectic type of approach, as opposed to. But consultants like to sell single solutions,
Right.
and it's like going to the gym and just working out with your right bicep, and that's all you're going to do. You have a great looking arm, but guess
Right.
what? The rest of your body's going to look like, you know what?
Yes. And that standardized work is somewhat the integrator of all these different things
Interesting. Interesting.
going on, right? Like another example, a lot of people want to implement Kanban. Very nice, but Kanban is a connection between standardized work with the operators and standardized work of the material handler, and for the withdrawal Kanban to be exact. And when the operator is not following the standardized work, for example, they do some kind of silly sub-assembly and accumulate the parts, then you will be releasing so many Kanbans that the material handler can't handle. On the other hand, if the material handler is not following the standardized work, the delivery frequency will be screwed up. Therefore, you might not get the machine, almost or not the machine, the material just in time. And that will create chaotic conditions. So in both cases, we need standardized work first and then use the Kanban to connect. But a
That's
lot of people.
excellent. Excellent point. Excellent point. Now, I was taught with my sensei Nakao. He said, "I don't know why Americans are so infatuated with Kanban." He says Kanban is an admission of failure to do one piece flow.
Yes. I mean,
it's pretty deep thinking, right?
Yeah, and my father said Kanban is a necessary evil.
Yeah, right? Oh,
great. We need it. I agree that we cannot create one piece flow on everything. Therefore, right. I need it, but it's a necessary evil. If I can create one piece flow, prioritize that first over Kanban. And so many places he went to is like, oh, why don't you connect this process? Why do we need Kanban here and take it off and take it off? And that was his advice, was create a one piece flow. And that will make a standardized work of the operators, right? And that's the core basic of everything. Yeah.
By the way, I remember, I won't say, it was a Danaher company, but I won't say who it was. It was in Europe, and they went over there, and they had two machines. One machine, machine A fed machine B, and they were sitting right next to each other. But they put a Kanban in between the two. And I'm like, why do you have this here? Oh, we're doing Kanban. Why don't the operators take the part to the next machine and machine it and then move on? You know, why did you stop here? Now you got all this pent up quality problems potentially, you know. But there's a lot of misunderstanding sometimes. Well, those were the early days too, where everybody was learning. But still, it's easy to get hung up on one aspect of this and just, you know, execute, in this case, Kanban, inappropriately, you know. So you're saying that standard work is the epicenter of everything that we do around it. And if you don't have that, none of the rest of it matters.
Right.
That's what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, I think so. That's what I learned about Toyota Production System, is that they have every standard, and a lot of companies do not have the standard. And, or how can I say, they don't have the standard, or they are not following the standard, or there's something wrong in the standard. They don't fix the reality to it.
Right.
And that's what I feel somewhat strange. And I made a blog post about this, is the lot of places will say, we do have standard, but we don't do Kaizen, right? But then you look at their performance, they will say, oh no, we don't have a good performance. We have bad quality, or we have unstable processes. And then the question should be, okay, then why don't we continuously improve the standard that we have? Why are you saying that we have standard, but we don't practice Kaizen? Because this doesn't make sense, because we will never have a perfect standard. I mean, I wish I have something, but in the end, there will be always, every time the problem happens, there's something is wrong with the standard. So as we do problem solving, we need to find the root cause in the standard that we need to upgrade. And that's how I learned things, right? So that it's a continuous improvement journey. So implementing standard means implementing continuous improvement. That's how I learned about it. But in many cases, like, they want to see, you know, oh, people suggest improvement ideas and stuff, but where is standard? Or are we respecting the standard? Or is there room for in the standard? They don't check. And that's something, yeah, I think that's some part that somewhat, I think Toyota people thought that's the common sense.
Yep.
Right. And that's why I don't think it was mentioned in Taichi Ono's book about this. But as these people like my father, former Toyota people, start to get involved in a lot of different companies, I think this is the area that we see a biggest hole, is like our standard is so narrow, or so, you know, it doesn't cover every aspect of the process. And that's the reason why we cannot perform the standardized work well. And that's the reason behind all this chaotic conditions. And before we talk about, you know, making, you know, fancy stuff, let's make sure these fundamental is in place. And
you know,
yeah,
I haven't done a fair amount of standard work in my day, you know, and again, working with Shingajitsu and Nakao and Iwata and those people who were the first lieutenants of Taishi Ono, and your father as well. Doing standard work is hard. And a lot of people like to avoid it and come up with reasons why they can't do it. And you've seen that, right? I mean,
yeah.
And you know, we have high mix. And people don't realize that Toyota was high mix.
Yes. Okay,
when they were starting, you know? And they think, oh, we don't make cars. And I said to one CEO once for an insurance company, he said, Mark, we don't make cars. And I said, thank God you don't.
Yes. Okay,
because I wouldn't drive one. his quality was so bad. And and so when you look at when you look at the companies today that you see who claim they're doing lean, I always point to the Toyota Production System house. And on that house, of course, we have two pillars. One is just in time, which gets violated regularly in some companies almost on a daily basis. Jidoka, which I hardly ever see, is the other pillar. And then on the bottom of the house, we have three things. We have standard work, Kaizen, and Hijunka level scheduling, right? And so I look at that house, and I'll ask anybody who claims they're doing lean, which one of these, are you doing any of these? And the answer is usually no, okay? But they have their Gemba boards up, and they have their posters, and they have the yellow tape on the floor, and they have all the things around it that in some sense are meaningless, in my opinion, because they're not anchored by a standard. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you seen that?
Yes, I think that's exactly what that's the exact condition we see everywhere is like, yeah, we have so many fancy visualization tools, but that visualization is not based on any kind of standard, right? And you might have a table, something that marks the floor, but that's like, okay, where's the standard work for the material handler or why it's located here? What's the justification for having a, you know, marking here? And there's no logical sense. In fact, the operators are moving around the tape, sort of detouring and wasting their time. So we're sending a very bad message, right? Because we are saying that, oh, look, we shouldn't have extra transportation. We shouldn't have extra motion. But on the shop floor, we're taping these areas that forcing the people to go around.
You're creating it.
Right. So we're sending a mixed message to the people. You're saying, we are saying that we should take this waste away. At the same time, we're taping the floor and making people go around. And that's a very wrong message, right? Because it's like saying we are lying to them, right? The management is saying we should eliminate the waste, but at the same time, we're keeping the waste here.
And then we're demanding productivity.
Right. And people are not stupid, right? And so they will get these messages. I've been to some places where they mark the area red because it's a safety zone, a safety violating area. But the operator was passing by and you ask the question, why? It's the shortcut. But then what we need to think is make that shortcut the safe place to, for them to go, right? Instead of just taping the floor red, we should change it to make a safe path over there.
You have exposure. Yeah.
Right. And take off the exposure so that people can freely move along doing their work because nobody wants to waste their time. And that's something, how can I say, it's this visualization based on I don't know what. And maybe it looks nice. I heard some companies are focusing on that, how to paint the floor before they talk about standardizing the work. And yeah, that's clearly a violation of. And that's another thing, basic thing I learned from, you know, the coaching is don't try to standardize nonsense, right? And we
I love that saying.
Yeah, but unfortunately we have seen so many standardization of nonsense. For example, quality checks. Okay, quality checks are important, we have to do, but then once in a while I see like a standard they say I need to check the back of, let's say, this computer, right? How am I supposed to check the back of the computer without lifting the thing or, you know, turning the stage down, or, right? and I've seen one example like saying like, okay, you need to check the bottom of the product, but the bottom of the product itself is almost like 100 kilograms. So how can I check the bottom of this thing when I can even lift it? And, what? You know, those are the thick quality requirements they're putting in the standardized work, and nobody really asked the question, well, how are we supposed to do it? Then they start blaming, oh, people are not following the quality whatever standard. And I'm like, oh no, don't make something impossible for people to do and blame them. We need to come up with a solution. And it's funny because this one example, I talked to the supervisors, and one of the supervisors starts saying, you know, At the end of the line, we add these packages to protect the bottom of the product so that when we ship to the customer, it doesn't have any kind of leakage or damage on the bottom of the product. Why don't we install that at the beginning of the line? And I was like, wow, this guy's smart, right? And by installing that protection at the beginning, yeah, it goes nice and smoothly and the total work content didn't change. I guarantee the quality. I don't need the inspection. Ta-da, it's gone. And you know, that kind of ideas are there.
Simple.
Yeah, simple ideas are there that saves a lot of waste in the process. And we just don't do that because and just put this sentence on the paper and think that people will follow.
Yeah, you said something earlier that was interesting. You said we could have a standard, but we're not following the standard, which could be a problem, right? It's a definition of a problem. And I remember in my early days at Jake Break running operations and in my early days, I knew everything, you know. I was the smartest guy in the world. And if you didn't believe me, just ask me, you know, I would tell you. And so I had Nikau come in from Shingajitsu and I said to him on Monday morning, Nikau, this week we're going to work on, I don't know what it was, single minute exchange to die, and we're going to work on TPM or whatever it was. I can't remember. He said, no, Delizio, son, we need to work on standard work. Oh, no. Nikau, I know how to do standard work. I can even take times by myself. I don't need a partner. That's how good I am, right? I can take time observations. I know how to do the process capacity sheet, operator front load charts. I know how to do the standard work combination charts, calculate tack time. I know. Come on, Nikau. I know how to do this. I know how to do that. Delizio, come with me. So we went over to one of my cells. And we all set up one piece flow, the whole thing, you know. And we posted our standard work sheet on the outside, which is one of the five documents. And it said, how many people on your standard work? And I said, five. He said, how many people in your cell? Eight. Delizio, son, you do not know standard work.
Yeah.
So in some sense, we were going through the motions of, you know, putting up all the charts and all that, but we weren't following it. Okay. And for whatever reason, the supervisor allowed eight people in the cell. Okay. And they weren't working attack time and they weren't working, you know, the whole thing was a mess. So that was a lesson to me.
Yep.
He brought me right back to standard work, Hide. Right back to standard work. Okay. No SMED, no TPM. No. No Kanban. Whatever you want to do. No.
Well, in the end, inside the TPM or Kanban or something, there's some standardized work in it. And if you don't have that basic thinking developed, in possibly the most simple process, which is the cycle work, how likely you can implement an advanced environment of TPM or something far more complicated. And, you know, and that's part that I think my coaches were teaching me is if you can practice that on the simple environment, and I really like the word that you use is the follow the standardized work, right? And then, I had the mindset typically, you know, the operator doesn't follow the standardized work. And, you know, my coaches will come. I mean, my dad will say that. And then he will look at the process and go like, okay, this machine switch, I'm going this way. But where's the switch? It's on this side of it. So I'm asking the people to go this way at the end of the cycle, right, backwards. And then asking the people to come and pick up the parts, but they forget because they have to make an extra motion. So he starts saying, why don't you put them switches to guide the people to the next material? So he starts saying is like, let the materials and this kind of physical environment to memorize standardized work, right? And people will automatically follow the standardized work. And that way people focus more on quality and Kaizen. And that was his message to me, is like, you're trying to force the people to follow standard. That's my bad mistake, is the layout and this condition of the material should guide the people towards automatically following the standard. Therefore, they can focus on improvement. And I was like, oh,
beautiful, wow. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. And if you don't have the discipline to do the fundamental basic standard work, how can you bring that discipline to anything else like SMED, TPM, or Kanban, or whatever? Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, well, let me ask you, as you've worked with American companies, right? Talk to me about Kaizen, because I'm finding nobody's doing Kaizen. Okay. Nobody's taking the time. I have one colleague of mine. She told me that her company, they'll do Kaizen from 2 to 4 in the afternoon on Wednesday, you know, and that's it. You know, they're not that, because they're too busy. They got too much to do. Okay. And I've also had people tell me, I can't do standard work until we fix some of our problems. In other words, they can't do Kaizen, right? And do standard work. And to me, that's like a patient saying to a doctor, I am not going to go to physical therapy until my arm gets better. Yeah. Okay. Well, wait a minute. The physical therapy is the Kaizen and the standard work. That's how you get better. And then they say, well, we're going to fix our problems first. Then we're going to do standard work. Well, wait a minute. How long have you been here? 8 years? So what's going to be different tomorrow? That's different from the last 8 years you've been here. Why do these problems even exist if you can just fix them tomorrow? You seem to know how to fix them all of a sudden. So why weren't they done in over the past 8 years? Why do they exist today? Because they had no methodology to do so, right? So yeah, you're not going to make your standard. Yeah, when you set standard work up, which to me is the one best way that you observed, not made up, then you're not going to hit your standard. And in a sense, that's a good thing because it gives you the opportunity to prioritize your problems and do Kaizen. But there's no framework to doing Kaizen. Now, have you seen that too, as far as Kaizen activity? Yeah.
I totally agree with that. I think the first thing everybody will say about Kaizen is they don't have enough resources, right? Basically people to conduct on those things. But I think what I'm learning from implementation of standardized work is that there are simple things that we can do. And the basic idea of the standard work is, for example, I can apply this to, you know, team leaders or supervisors on what are the things that they're doing. And the first thing I would say is, what are the things that they shouldn't be doing?
Yeah.
And a lot of places that managers are doing is, for example, material handling, right? They have material handlers, but they somehow, you know, don't want to be standing around not touching anything. So they start touching materials and printing labels or some probably the most expensive, simple jobs that they can do, right? And we have to say that's not their responsibility. There is somebody else who has that responsibility, which should be described and allocate the time inside standardized work. Therefore, you have free time to do Kaizen. And that's something a lot of companies in this trap is because they don't have standardized work, because they don't define who should be doing when on this work, they get logged, you know, they get logged in, they get tied to this chaos and they can't get out. And they think they don't have resources.
And then what happens when the non-standard item is done by some material handler when he's not available that day to do it? Then those labels don't get printed. Then what happens? Does the operator go out of their work sequence? They have to print labels now, you know? And so it's you're absolutely right. If you don't have this whole thing choreographed in a standard, then the waste is going to really hit you.
Right. And unfortunately, a lot of management is tied to firefighting because they don't understand this standardized work, right? Like I've been to a factory where they said, oh, we have a very high absentee and turnovers. And I think the area said, we need 30 people in this area and only 25 showed up. And that's why we didn't hit the rate. And I start asking the question because we only have 15 standardized work here, right? And there was a resistance from the management team that, oh, okay, I didn't cover everything. Okay, fine. Let's go to the shop floor. And we found one small sub-assembly and we immediately put it inside, you know, did the Kaizen and put it inside one of the 15.
No, 15.3.
Yeah. And which was, and it was like 0.1 or something. And it was like instantly we can put it rebalanced line. So now we have 15 standard work and we have 25 people showed up. There should be no excuse for us to hitting the rate. We actually have 10 extra people. And you have these 10 people can work on Kaizen, you know?
Exactly.
If they train. And that's when it happened, it's like, oh, no, these 15, 25 people are not fully trained. Okay, let's use that 10 people to train, right? 10 people can go to skill training, or we can allocate them to developing the skills, right? But because they get tied to this big data, and they're only looking at this big data, oh, yeah, our efficiency rate was 80%, and they were only looking at this total number of people showed up, and it didn't match with whatever the plan that they have. They don't know the detail inside of how many inflation has happened inside.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the standardized work activity is going back to the basics and going back to, okay, how many people we really need in this process? And if that's 15, okay, that's the number of people we should have for direct labor. Now, my coaches never said, let's fire the rest of whatever people.
Oh,
no,
no.
no, no,
Right.
no, 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 no. They need, I need some people to cover the absentee. That's for sure, right? And they will ask the question, okay, how many holidays, legal holidays the employee can have? And, you know, typically it's about 10% of the workday. Okay, then 10% of the labor, you must keep them to cover for legal absentee, right? On top of there's also sickness and some kind of, you know, unpredictable thing will happen. Well, let's make sure we keep those people and let's make sure they're continuously trained by keeping the rotation among the staff, I mean the operators. Let's keep, make sure we keep some people for, you know, Kaizen activities. Don't just freak out immediately, jump to the conclusion that we don't have enough people. We need to understand what's underneath that, and that's why I always connect the standard work and management. Is like you said in your example of standard work, very rarely, right, we can say, oh, we should have 5 people in the process and we have 8. It's amazing. A lot of places we can't count.
Right? Matter of fact, the 3 extra people actually pulls down your standard work because, or your ability to produce, because inevitably one of those people is going to be pushed to being overtaxed time and they get in the way, right? Then your output is, you know, is according to that higher cycle time. Now, the other thing I see is when you look at the standard work and the ability of people to learn, the way we measure ourselves, especially the companies that are so focused on productivity, that the CFO might sit there and say, well, I can't have these 10 extra people if they're not putting out widgets because it will hurt our productivity, okay? And it's like, really? So that's the reason why you're not going to do improvement, right? And my goal would be, well, how do we improve our lead times and our quality and our on-time delivery so that we grow the business? You know, I told this story in a previous episode. We had a company over in England that I helped them, and they didn't believe they could do this, but I took the lead time down to 3 days from 28.
Yep.
And we went from 30,000 units a year of demand to 110. Okay. And we did it with the same headcount. And inventory turns quadrupled. Okay. So we didn't do it through inventory. Right. And, you know, and it was a commodity product. So if you're just, you know, producing with better lead times and better quality, you're going to grow your business because they're not going to just look at you as a price or a cost perspective. They're going to look at you as an, hey, I got value here, right? And I got the best quality. I got the best lead time. I don't have to carry all the inventory anymore, right? And if you're a distributor, that's a big deal. So these are the things that we think about, you know, how do we grow? Because anybody can fire people. That's so easy to do. Some of these big companies that lay off tens of thousands of people, any idiot can do that. I'm sorry. You know, that's not lean. And then they call it lean. That's not lean. Okay.
Right. And I think that's the part that I think people misunderstood about Toyota production system, because
right.
From Taiji Ono days, they're saying that I think English version said extra capacity, but they call it, I like to call it extra power, human power. that we and Toyota Way 2020 said have like 10 points, and one of them is to generate extra power. And that means that free these people, because these people are the source of creativity, right?
Right.
And these people can become a power for the organization to generate next, you know, future great ideas. Like you said, it might be flexibility. It might be, you know, reducing the lead time. It's something that will create a new competitive advantage for your company that will, you know, be successful. And I'm looking at Toyota right now, and they're like the only company that's talking about the full lineup of technologies, right? Right. It's not just EVs, but hydrogens and other type of powertrain. But I'm also looking at their recruitment informations, and they are not hiring additional people, right? And so they are generating those excess capability through Kaizen activities, and they are joining this new development team, and that's the power that they have. They are not saying like, oh, we cannot design new hydrogen because we don't have enough, it's too expensive, which is a lot of OEM is saying, right?
You know, I think a lot of the American mindset would be, oh, I'm going to go into a new venture like EV vehicles, you know, electric vehicles. We got to hire new people. I got to build a new plant. I got to hire new people, right? Yeah. That's like the knee-jerk reaction to American management, as opposed to, wait a minute, if I continue to do Kaizen, I can create that capability, that capacity to be able to do that. Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, you know, again, at Jake Break, we went from a $65 million company to a $240 million company with the same headcount.
Right.
Same headcount.
Yeah.
Okay. And our productivity went from like 3 or 4 units per 100 man hours to close to 40. Okay. Now, and people were not working harder. Matter of fact, because we had standardized work, they were working easier because there were less problems. There were less problems to deal with. You know, when things don't go right during the day, that's disrespectful. When you're firefighting all day and you know that you got to get up the next morning and go in for another round of firefighting and problems, and I have no time then to use my brain because all I'm doing is what I call swatting flies. You know, you just, oh, here's another fly. I got to hit that one. But then another fly comes, you know, and there's no way to calm it so that I can improve to the next step, you know, now, what about a lot of the consulting in our space, you know, the lean space, comes out with all these new inventions and all these new things. And again, very rarely do I see any company who say they're doing lean do standard work, right? And that's your experience too, as we discussed. What about something like Kata? Now, you're familiar with Toyota. Kata was the big rage, and it still is the big rage. And when I learned about what Kata was after looking at a 400-page book, I said, well, geez, you know, that was just inherent in what we did. It wasn't even like, but it's now being treated as, not only is it being treated as a separate tool, it's being treated as a definition of lean, which is wrong. But what's your experience with that?
Yeah, I also saw a lot of mysterious kata activities, to be honest. And I think they went to Toyota and saw a bunch of balls, which Toyota has a lot of them. But I feel like it's been somewhat misused. And also, like, the information that I got from my mentor, my father, and not only that, but generally discussion in Japan, I think this was led by the knowledge management group, that they saying that kata is a bad thing, right? One of the reasons why Japanese companies failed after the, you know, the 90s is so many companies fail because they stick to one kata. And so what these guys are saying is, like, some successful companies like Toyota started to destroy kata, and to destroy the kata, they create a ba. A ba means a field, and, you know, you mix a lot of different thinkers onto the ba, and they exchange ideas to generate new ideas. And I'm thinking about that, and what Toyota is doing on Gemba is exactly that, right? It's not a same group of people always being there. They're mixing a lot of functionalities to come to the Gemba to work together. And also right now, they're mixing a lot of foreigners, right? Before, they used to be a bunch of Japanese people, but now a lot of foreigners are joining and exchanging ideas. And I mentioned in my previous conversation, like one of the reasons why, one of the core things that I think my father and the Toyota people learned through TPS implementation in the early 90s is they learned about coaching, which was far more developed and discussed in the United States than Japan, that they incorporate into TPS activities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that happened not because they took some kind of coaching classes, because they had Kentucky, or they had Indiana, or they had West Virginia, or they have factories, Gemba, on the shop floor where these Japanese managers can interact with the foreigners to understand that they might not be able to do the traditional Japanese strict way of coaching or teaching things. They need to come up with a better approach, more respecting human approach. And I think that's why they were successful, is like they evolved. They transformed from the old kata to a new kata. And they made a new kata through Gemba activities. And that's what I learned from my coaches, is like, for example, A3, my boss hated the format of A3, right? and like, okay, just take one piece of paper and summarize the thought freely. And that doesn't mean use the computers. And it could be handwriting, because that handwriting will give you far more flexibility to draw things. Or even to some degree, I'm not going to use the value stream mapping, but the material information flow is, it's like, here's a piece of paper, write down the material information somewhat freely. There are some critical points that I need to include, but it's free. And I don't have to be, tied to this format to some degree, so that I can think and explain things better. Now, did I succeed? Yes, no. But there was this freedom. I got a lot more freedom to think than the kata methodologies to. And I'm not saying they don't have any kata. I think Toyota is trying to become scientific, but I don't think there is a definition of scientific method yet. We human beings are still trial and error and trying to come up better with that methodology. So yes, we do use standard book, and that might be the only format that I've been trained, or kata that I've been trained, right? Is to write down the production capacity sheet, write down the combination table, write down the work chart, but everything else is somewhat free to, continuously think my mindset. So, and I don't understand, like, some of the board, I don't understand, like, my boss will always look at the board and say, why are you showing this yesterday's newspaper, right?
What they refer to as Gemba boards.
Right.
Gemba boards, yeah.
And he implemented board like hourly count board, right? Hourly production board, right? And that's to check what's exactly happening right now.
Right.
And another type of board that I've seen is change point management board. That means before the shift starts, man, machine, material method, is there something, some kind of change in the standard that we, for example, we have a new operator. That change point should be highlighted at the beginning of the shift. Therefore, the team leader supervisor can follow up on that issue before the shift start. They don't look at the numbers. Oh yeah, we had a new guy here today. That's why our output sucked. No. That problem should be highlighted before the shift start, and let the team leader focus on that training of that operator on the first couple hours to make sure he or she is fine-tuned to the level of the standard work, which is again the basic. And if that's not happening, he or she shouldn't be working on the Kaizen, right?
I love it. It's funny. I was one of my past clients I was with. They were doing an operating review, and they showed a Pareto of why they missed their production. And the biggest bar on the Pareto was operator training. And I said, I want you to take that bar and relabel it. It was operator error. That's what it was. I want you to take that bar and I want you to put the words management error, not operator error. Because you blame the operator. Who's in charge of this process? Who's in charge of assuring quality? Who's in charge of assuring training and the operators are trained? That's not the operator's fault. That's your fault. Okay, if you want to assign fault, it's the process. What is your, and I go back to, okay, maybe it's not even your fault. It's your process of change. It's your process of indoctrinating a new operator. It's your process, perhaps, that's not clear, that the standard work isn't clear and it can't be followed or wasn't followed. It may be a process of how your team leaders work. Okay, so it's not the operator. Take the word operator off of there. Okay, you know, and so again, always going back to process, right? And saying to yourself, well, what went wrong in the process? But if you're going to blame anybody, I said, put your name there. Yep. Don't, if you want to blame the operator, then blame you. It's your fault. Okay. If you want to assign fault, you know, which I don't usually like to do, but, you know, that's interesting. So it's a wholly different perspective. So I think what's going to happen here, Hide, is if anybody, any company out there listens to you in this podcast, in this episode, I think you just reduced the consulting revenue in the industry by about 30%.
Yeah, I'm not about the revenue of the, yeah, I'm not good at making revenues because I want to make things simple and, you know.
Well, one of the things that really attracted me to you and to have you on the show here is that you and I have a passion, and maybe it's almost a religion, if you will, to teach the fundamental basics. And I made a commitment to my sensei, Nakao-san, and he remembered this when I last met him 30 years ago. He swore me to teach the teachings of Toyota and Ono, and do not. So I even draw attack time in red because I know Ono, it was important to him for that. And when I see things, okay, look, I'm not saying that TPS can't be improved, okay? Otherwise, I wouldn't believe in Kaizen.
Yep.
But when I see people create things that are not in concert with the philosophy for the purpose of confusing the market and generating their own revenue in that regard. And a good example is, and I'll be honest, they're not in existence anymore, but you know, TBM came out with Lean Sigma. Lean Sigma confused everybody. It's probably one of the biggest disservices done in the lean community, okay, to combine those two things. And you want to talk about deviating from standard work?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody
mm-hmm.
was doing standard work.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was doing Six Sigma projects, which had all kinds of phony savings associated with them, you know. And by the way, I'm certified in Six Sigma, and I think Six Sigma is a great thing to know, and it could be useful in some cases in problem solving, but most problems I believe can be solved with some very basic 5Y and Pareto type tools, you know, and I don't think you need the sophistication to solve most of these problems. And the first thing is, how do you define a problem? Which I had an episode on earlier on in my in this podcast. We talked about, well, how do you think about defining a problem? And I agree with you on A3 because A3 to me leaves it wide open as to how to define a problem. There's no, you got a block that says problem definition, but there's no instruction as to how to correctly construct a good problem statement. Okay. And there's a lot of guidelines in that regard, but, you know, I think this is great because, you know, when I look at, and let me ask you the question, when you look at the Toyota Production System house, and again, there's five things on it. There's just-in-time on one of the pillars, Jidoka on another, and then you've got standard work, Kaizen, and Hijunka level scheduling. We didn't talk much about that yet, but when you look at that, how many companies do you run into that are practicing any of those things? And, you know, they may do a Kaizen once a quarter, you know, and...
It's a tough question. I know a lot of places are seriously trying that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they understand the philosophies and they are trying. So yes, Toyota is I think ahead. Every time I go to tour, I learn so many things. But even like recently, I read an interesting article for Toyota. Mr. Akio implemented a new system recently, and that is because when they produce something, some of the production is based on fake orders, or how can I call it, the assumption orders by the dealership,
forecast
and forecasts. And some of them was actual orders. So now they implement the system that they prioritize the actual orders more than those assumption or the fake orders. But that means that we've been doing overproduction, right? We've been overproducing something that was not necessarily required by the market yet. And somehow we were allocating that spot. So there's always a room to improve in the system. And that's the whole idea of the system. And yeah, so as long as... Yeah, it's a tough question. But as long as we're thinking towards the right direction and we have the same foundation, right? It might be a big house, a nice looking house. But as long as we have that foundation and the two pillars and the roof on top of it, yeah, maybe it's a small, but we're moving towards that direction.
But you know, you've answered the question in a lot of people's mind about why aren't all the other things listed, like SMED and TPM and Kanban, and you know, you can go on and on and on, right? Under the Toyota system house. And you answered it very well. You know, it's a real learning, I think, for a lot of people, that standard work is kind of like the catalyst. You know, you got to think about just in time as more of a philosophy, right? In terms of a way to think. And Jidoka is, yeah, you could argue it's a mechanical thing that detects defects and the machine stops, but it's also a respect for people, from the respect that it doesn't demand that an operator stand there and watch the machine run all day, right? And I always say, when I do see that, I say, well, what if the tool does break? Well, stop the machine. So he's gonna stand here just for that? And how often does it break? You know, and it's not gonna prevent it from breaking. So now the question is, why are your tools breaking? You know, so it doesn't happen, you know? Or whatever. Why did you produce a defect? You know, so the foundation of standard work, Kaizen, and Hijunka, those things work together. And it's interesting to note, though, that all the other things, in some sense, what I heard you say, are meaningless. 5S, visual management, all the other things, TPM, SMED, go down the list. If you can't do standard work and don't have the discipline, number one, then you can't do the other things, which are more, in some cases, more complex. And number two is standard work is kind of like the lightning rod that attracts all these other things. So they work in concert with each other. But without the standard work, you have no core attraction to do these things. So all these other things then are just virtual signaling. Like you said, hey, look, we outlined the safety area. Yeah, but it's in the way of the operator's work sequence. And if he or she has to do 300 parts a day in a work sequence, they got to walk around that 300 times. Add that up. Add that up on an annual basis. You'll find out how many miles you made them walk. You know, it's incredible when you look at it that way, right? We had one, by the way, a lady walking 1,500 miles a year extra. It was from San Jose, because that's where the plant was, to St. Louis. We did a picture of it, and we showed this is how much. Her name was Ann, I think. This is how much Ann was walking every year. No, she had to join a gym afterwards, but after we did Kaizen. Okay. Yeah. But you know, it's interesting that you say all this and how you look at things, which is incredibly interesting.
And like, for example, just in time, what's the essence of just in time is people know what they need to produce now, right? So before they start the standardized work, they should receive an information just in time to know what are they supposed to do now? Because the biggest ways we do is we work on things that we don't need to do it now, right? That happens in office all the time, is we're working on something that the deadline is like 3 weeks away, and we forgot to do something that we're supposed to be doing right now. And that's the essence of just in time, is connected to standardized work. It's like providing, you know, what you need to produce now, right? And that's the whole idea of takt time, and everything is like, one by one, I provide you exactly what you need to work on now. That's why you don't overproduce. And same thing with the Jidoka concept, is like, okay, how can I build in quality to your work? Because when you didn't build the quality into your process, and repairing is a big waste of time, of anybody's time, because I'm redoing everything again. And the important part of this Jidoka concept that I understand is, at every cycle, every takt time, this operator should be able to say, did I do a good job or bad job? If I did a bad job, go ahead, pull the undone, and just say, something went wrong. I'm not sure. Oh, I made this mistake. Okay. And then the team leader will come and they will help you understand why you made a mistake or how to improve that further. So it's a self-learning mechanism of, you know, how did I do a good job or not? If not, why? And learn from that mistakes. And so every one of these philosophy is connected. If that condition is not happening on every station of the standardized work, we don't call it TBS. And that's what my coach was trying to get me. It took me a long time to get there. I like to, you know, jump onto the fancy tools and stuff. But bottom line is, process by process, every people should know what they need to work on right now. And then the quality of the work that they did, and they have they could pull down according to that.
Well, you know, and I think our jungle level scheduling is a notion of standardization.
Yes,
because yes. You know, if you don't have that standardization, if today you're making 100 units a day and tomorrow it goes to 250, then it's not standard. And everybody says, well, you know, our business is seasonal. First of all, I have not met one business yet that's not seasonal, okay, or has some seasonality in it. Even McDonald's is seasonal during the day. 12 noon is different than 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay. And so every business is seasonal. So that's not an excuse, but what they don't understand is, what's the time horizon that you're going to do your level loading and set your level loaded schedule. Right. Of course, maybe around Christmas, it's more busy than it is in May. Okay. Well, yeah, your tech time is going to be different and your loading is going to be different and everything's going to be different. So, you know, when I look at this, we come up with all kinds of excuses why we can't do this. You know, but hijunka level scheduling is in a sense, necessary for a standard beat or rhythm or tack of the facility. You know, and when it doesn't work that way, it's out of sync.
Right? Yes. I used to help a company that was producing snowmobiles and golf carts, and you know. But they will say they have seasoning, but they don't levelize the orders. So a lot of chaotic things happen, and like they overstuff go-kart when they are supposed to be preparing for the snowball.
There you go.
And we level it, right? It's not perfect. I'm not saying it was a perfect levelization,
it never is. Yeah,
it never is. But you don't create this crazy chaotic condition on whatever based on the forecast. I just level the order to say, okay, from this month to this month, we focus on snowboard. From this month, and then additional orders will be levelized and included in the system, but we give them somewhat a priority in the sequence, and yeah, it works.
I think you missed an opportunity though, because if you got that company to produce green golf balls, then they could use the snowmobile in the snow to play golf. So you missed a whole opportunity.
yeah, I wasn't that creative, right? Yeah. We could play golf in the winter. Yes, we can. Yes.
I can't play golf in the summer, so don't worry about that. I mean, I'm a terrible golfer, but I like to play, but I'm a terrible golfer. Yeah. But so you know, when you look at all of this, kind of wrapping this up a little bit, but it's so refreshing to hear you talk about standardization and to talk about, you know, the importance of standard work, not only for the traditional, you know, operator producing the part, but the standard work for the material handler has to be in concert. The standard work for even the team leader has to be in concert with all of this this rhythm, this beat, you know. And the analogy I always like to make was, you know, so many, and you probably have seen this, so many people set up a manufacturing cell. And let's just argue that they set it up correctly, okay, which normally doesn't happen. But so to me, the machines and the equipment is analogous. When I compare this to an orchestra, the instruments get set up. So you have your percussion section and your string section, and you have all the different sections. That's your equipment. That's your cell. The operators, of course, are the musicians. The standard work is the sheet music, and the tap time is a conductor. So if all of those are not playing together in concert, the music doesn't sound good. And that exactly to me is what happens when we're out of sequence with standard work. You know, it's like giving the operators their machines or the musicians their instruments with no music to play. Well, what's that going to sound like, you know? And there's no beat, there's no rhythm, there's no tact. That's the conductor, right? So that music has to be in concert with the timing and the beat. So that's my analogy I like to make. And so many just do part of that. They set up the music equipment and the operators, but they don't give them the standard work or the tact time, the beat, you know? But your concept of bringing it out into standardizing everything that we do and then allowing time for Kaizen at the appropriate time is so very important, I think.
Yes, I think so. By standardizing, you will free up people from firefighting to more time to work on Kaizen. And Kaizen will give competitive advantage to businesses eventually. You do have people wasting their time in your organization, so why don't free them? And standardization is a powerful tool. And a lot of firefighting, I think, is happening because this standard doesn't exist or it's not good enough. And that's what I learned from my coaches. And one of the things that I said, I have a homework that I promised that I need to work on, is that I firmly believe that there's a structure of sort of like basic things. It's not random thing. And I think that's how my father did, was like he memorizes all kind of things going on. But if I listen to his comment, I start to see some kind of structure behind how he is questioning things. And what I mean by structure is on the Gemba, there's points, lines, areas, and bodies that sort of making this shape on the floor. And like, for example, one of the examples I always use is like, where is the starting point of work, right? Do we know who needs to be where, what time, right? And most cases, we don't have that. And that because of that, they don't start the shift on time. And then, okay, let's say this is the point where the operator needs to start his or her work. Then what are the pre-work that they need to do before coming to the area? They might have to change their clothes. They might have to wash their hands. They might have to do exercises. They might have to do TPM. They might have to do whatever. What are the pre-work that they need to do? That's a line. And then during the work, I have increments of tuck time that they repeat the standard work. And afterward, do I need to clean up the machine again to finalize your day? Or what's the end of the day closing work that looks like? So I form those lines. And then I, like I said, based on the tuck time and multiple tasks, I balance and come up with the combinations of standardized work. And that's the structure that I've been repeatedly trained by my coaches, is that don't miss any part of the structure and create a system, right? We talk about system a lot, but we don't understand that the foundational, how can I say, blocks or how many components of this thing is these small points or lines that we define inside the standard work is the foundation. Then we can create some mechanism and systems, is what I'm learned from my bosses, right? Like I said, a mechanism might be like a theoretical number of people, right? That's the minimum number of people are required to keep this machine running. So let's make sure they're always there. But then I have a system. I have a system to say X amount of people escape for absentee, X amount of people escape for training. And management knows those people, right? They can easily say, oh, I should have five extra people today. Oh, one person is missing. Okay, fine. They take one person. That's why they don't break down the theoretical manpower of five people, right? You always supply five people to the line. And the rest of people will be balanced according to the participation and stuff. But
mm-hmm.
but that structure is something that I learned and I saw from my advices of my coaches about standardized work, is that this structure is completely missing. That's why we are firefighting all of the day, right? We don't define
yeah.
the
yeah.
of or,
so it's not, yeah. Sounds like your father had a standard work in terms of how he thought about things, didn't he?
Yeah. In the end, he didn't
work in his
he
mind.
didn't say
yeah.
it, but I told him, like, I think you have a pattern of way of coming up with these things.
Yeah.
And when I explained it, this structure to him, he really liked it. He thought, oh, that's a good discovery. Yeah, there's a reason. Yeah, and he's like, that's basic. I need to work on it, and I need to sort of, you know, deploy this thing. I'm already trying it in a lot of shop floor, and it works quite well. And we discover we're missing so many things.
It was intuitive to him. And the other thing, interesting thing you said was, in addition to the standard work that you would create, let's say to produce a part, the pre-shift needs to be standardized and the post-shift. You know, I would never let anybody take the time of cleanup out of tech time unless the cleanup was documented by operator. What do they have to do? Otherwise, it was an excuse to stop the shift 10 minutes early to put on your coats and wait for the time clock.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
so
exactly.
I wouldn't let him take out available time unless I could see documentation. You have your cleanup and your pre-shift, the meeting, what do you have to do beforehand? Otherwise, you are using time. You're not standardized as to if the shift is supposed to start at 10 after 7, but you come in at 7 for your pre-meetings and all that, it should start at 10 after 7, not at 11 after 7.
Yes.
Right? And if your tech time is 60 seconds, you just lost one part, you know?
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And that's something sounds so simple, but it's missing everywhere.
It's missing. It's missing. It's the fundamentals.
Yeah. And that's what the amazing thing about of Toyota is, like, if they start the ship at 7 o'clock and tech time is 1 minute, 1 minute after 7 o'clock, the first vehicle comes off the line.
And let me ask you this question. I went into a lot of companies that when they assemble the product, especially the ones that do electronics, and they have a lot of stack up problems with the components. All the components might be in sync. They might be two spec, but when they put them into the assembly, the stack up produces a defect and it doesn't pass test. What's your view on rework as it relates to standard work? Now the part needs to be reworked. How do you think about that?
I was told that don't standardize abnormal work, right? Eliminate it. So instead, okay, we need to do rework. I get that, but we need to look at why those reworks are happening and attack the root cause of that. But for the rework, I would say there are some, how can I say, check process that I can't standardize, like how to make sure where I need to rework that, right? You don't want to rework something later, you figure out, oh, I need to reopen the product again and work on something else. How to inspect or something, those kind of things can be standardized.
But yeah, you know, in this one particular situation, the assembly gets put together with all the electronic components, but because they have a stack up problem in the design, the rework just turns into the operator changing out components until it works. Okay. The components might be good, right? And then once it passes, it passes. So my view on that is that's non-standard work, and that you should use those defects as problem solving. And actually my first reaction was, because it's most likely a design problem,
yes,
all those parts should be brought to the VP of Vice President of Design and put them on his desk.
I think, like, in the automobile industry, there's a lot of like shims that they use to adjust the positioning stuff. And one of the things we learned, right, like the machine measures and gives a instruction to operate to pick specific shims, but we learned that the shims was not in spec. And then we look at the process of the shim manufacturing process, and we learned that the maintenance of those grinding gears and stuff is not well, that they
There you go.
Yeah. And so, you know, they're not guaranteed the quality that they're supposed to be guaranteeing. And we fix that problem before we're trying to come up with, oh, yeah, in average, the operator have to scan the shim twice. So, you know, let's make a cycle time based on two testing. No, it should be once. That's the minimum that
whenever it's average, because it sometimes happens, sometimes doesn't, it should never be put into standard work.
Exactly. Right. That's the point that I wanted to get to. Yeah. And they come up with all kind of,
That's interesting. So in this case, should the operator stop their work sequence and fix the problem and rework the part, or what should they do?
Operators or somebody off?
Well, you know, the operator, let's say it's an electronic assembly and there's stack up problems. The operator didn't make any errors. They put all the components in the right way, but because of the design, there were stack up issues where the product didn't pass test. So now what they got to do is they got to pull the components out and randomly mix them and put new ones in and see if they get the right tolerances so it would pass the test, right? The electronic test. Do you hold that the operator should be the one doing all that switching out, or what?
I've seen like designers or engineers being held accountable for that. That means they might try to do that rework first, and then but they will be, you know, they understand the pain of the shop floor. Like, in a case where the component didn't fit well, the team leaders and group leader pulled the arm down, and then eventually the message went to the engineers, and they came like within 15 minutes or something to the shop floor, and they told him, the engineers, to work on that thing, right? Tell me if this is possible. And the engineer eventually said, no, it's not possible, it's a design issue. Thank you. Now, fix the design, right?
Awesome.
We will keep sustaining this condition with this component that doesn't fit well. The team leader was jumping in and helping the operator to work on it, but now you understand the problem and the pain. Now go and fix it. And it's interesting was that
Beautiful.
The engineer manager came by also, and he like deeply bowed and said, this is our problem, this is our mistake, we were working on it, and we're gonna fix it. Like, and at the end of the day, he was reporting to these people what mistake they made and what countermeasures in place by when they will be fixed. So yeah, I think until they understand the pain of this thing, I think that we need to have them actually try things.
Yeah, because this one particular company I'm thinking of, this rework and the operators changing out components has just become normalized.
Right.
They just think that's part of the operator's job. And this is why I suggested all the parts that don't pass because of this stack up problem. I got a little, because they weren't getting the engineers to the floor. So I said, you should pick all the parts up and every day bring them to the desk of the vice president of design and put them on his desk.
Yep.
And say, okay, now you got to fix these. Okay.
Yeah.
You got to figure this out, I should say, you know.
I heard that kind of story in the old Japanese.
Was that right?
Yeah. They brought it, the container or something of defect to the engineers guys. And just left it there. But nowadays, I think they have a policy that if the andon is pulled, they need to come, right? And there's no excuse.
This particular company, it's just expected that it's part of the operator's job to do rework in the cell, which then again, you got to argue they're not doing standard work anyway. So that's one of the problems. But if they were doing standard work, then you're asking the operator to do non-standard things.
Right.
And that's not right, you know? And so, okay, that's good. That's good. That's the answer I was hoping you were going to give, and it was good. Excellent. So we got to get back to basics, and that's so hard for. It makes so much common sense, but it's so hard to get people to do that. And you know, it's like take all your posters down and all your yellow tape and all your Gemba boards and all your 5S posters and just stop. Go back to batch. Go back to batch manufacturing, okay? You know, because if you're not doing Kaizen, you're not doing standard work, you're not doing lean. Sorry.
You know, one other thing I always say to the batch production people is go ahead, do batch. But the batch size is 100. Okay, every fucking line produce 100 pieces, right? In most cases, they don't. They produce 95 because of defects. They produce 105 because the material was available. Or they produce 50 because the machine breakdown or the tooling breakdowns in the middle, right? You're not doing batch. Come on, do batch production. But then they need to have a good standard behind it, right? How to control the machining, how to control the supply chain. You need standard. And okay, I always say, I don't want to do this discussion with batch versus one by one. Go ahead, do batch production. Show me. Because I never seen one. The only place that was doing actually truly batch production was Toyota. And I said that to my dad, Toyota is the only company that's doing batch. And he looked at me with this nasty thing, but eventually he was starting. Yeah, that's true. The only company that really calculating the economical batch size or whatever for whatever different equations they have and sticking to that is Toyota. And behind that is to make sure all kind of standard to make sure that they guarantee the quality and the, you know, machine availability
every time
that I pick up a, you know, a batch and that quantity is produced. It's so predictable. That's why they control things with a simple piece of Kanban, right?
Right.
Now there's so many companies are rushing to implement this IT system is because they cannot predict how many pieces will be produced.
Right.
Because there are so many defects, or there will be so much material that if somebody keep running the machine, or they don't know when the batch going to end, so they just keep running the machine until everything is gone, right?
No, you're right. And, you know, again, I think the essence of standard work is not to document your inabilities. It's to set the one best way you know today, albeit not perfect, and use it as, when you don't hit it, as an opportunity to prioritize those reasons to do your next Kaizens.
Yes.
The whole idea with a standard is, you know, you're not going to hit it all the time.
Right.
And those problems are what you want to focus on to be able to attain that standard on a more consistent basis. That's the whole essence of it, right?
Yes. And that's, I thought that people from engineering or people from science people learn in university is design of experiment is to say, let's control all these variables except for one that we're going to test today and see if that hypothesis works or not.
Scientific method. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the scientific method. But today we bring so many variables and we only look at the big output data and say, oh, what happened today? Oh, yeah, people didn't show up. Oh, something happened with the supply chain, which could be completely misleading. And we have to understand what are those real variables are and did we control those variables? And that's the essence of scientific thinking.
Yes.
And that's exactly where Toyota is from. And it's not unique to Toyota. It became unique to Toyota. That's the sad part of this thing.
Well,
but
I call it, instead of plan, do, check, act, like Deming said, it's plan, do, check, explain.
Mm.
Right? They're explaining why they didn't hit it, you know? And, you know, I it's funny, you remind me of a story. I had a new company we were working with, and one of the operators said, I could do 12 of these faster than one piece flow. I mean, why am I going to do one at a time? I said, okay, why don't you take me down and show me how you do 12 at the same time? So he laid out 12 of the parts, and he started working on the first one. Okay. I said, wait. What about these other 11? You said you were going to do them all at once. Okay. You're working on one, then you go to the next one. I said, when you go to the third one, part number 1 and 2 and 4 through 12 are waning. You're not working on them all at the same time. You told me you could do them all at once. I don't know how you do that.
Yeah.
Because they all should be processed all at the same time if you can do all 12, right? So, you know, it's interesting. You know, and, you know, I guess maybe we can end this by saying that the basics work. We know they work because we have experience doing that. And the more we deviate from basics and from all these new silver bullets that get put out there by these consultants, sometimes they repackage the same things with different names to, you know, give the illusion that they created something new. our consulting industry sometimes is the worst. The lean consulting industry sometimes is the worst enemy of continuous improvement. I'd say it is. And so believe in the basics. They're not sexy. They're not, you know, but they're fun. If you can get it done, it's fun. And I'll leave this thought and to get your final thoughts. Toyota had a saying that says, we get brilliant results with ordinary people running brilliant processes. Okay. You don't need to be a super duper PhD rocket science scientist to have a great company and again, getting back to those basics, especially in those more sophisticated scientific businesses where they look at manufacturing as kind of like a boring thing to them, because we're sophisticated. We just came up with a brand new formula that's going to revolutionize the space industry, but you still got to make it. And your mentality's got to move out of scientific thinking in a lab into a production mentality, okay? And that's boring to them because they're so brilliant. Believe me.
Yeah.
Just ask them.
Yeah, I that's something I learned is through implementation of this basics on production show floor, which a lot of people don't think it's sexy or whatever, but it's full of knowledges, full of, it goes back to ties to so many things that I didn't know about. And in some, many cases, it's go back to middle school, or high school stuff that I somewhat ignored. So all this knowledges is not just knowledge, it's alive, and it's so critically important of us being human beings. So, and it goes back to this whole, right, respecting people. And I know there's all kinds of naive respect people movement activity going on. But if we ignore those fundamentals of what we learn and what, the society based on science, and if we don't respect that, that's not respect for people. We are going back to the monkeys.
Exactly right. When a leader presides over chaotic processes and insists on not given time and framework to do Kaizen, that is one of the biggest respect for people violations I see.
Yes, I think so. So I know that this fancy presentation about respect or people engagement, and I love that topic, but let's go back to this basic, because people shouldn't be suffering with basic. Basic should come almost like air, right? Or water or something. And unfortunately, we are not providing fresh air or fresh water to the people.
No.
Yeah, no. And they are struggling to breathe.
That's right.
And let's not talk about people engagement or respect when you know, choking them, right?
That's right.
And that's how I see it. Is like, I have learned so many things through standardized work implementation that we don't provide things that we need, and that's why our performance is bad. And let's go back to the basic. It's just the core lessons, and I will keep repeating this no matter how unpopular I am. Because I think that's the important
thing. Well, yeah, it's unpopular sometimes because, first of all, you're stepping on somebody else's gravy train from a consulting perspective. And second of all, some of these things are very hard to do. To do work is a lot of hard work, but it makes you face your demons, okay? And if you don't face your demons, the elephant in the room is going to come back and bite you sooner or later, you know? And that's the issue. Well, we can, you know, you and I could probably talk about this for another 5 hours. Okay.
Yes, I think so.
Maybe we should close it down for now. I think we got our message out about the basics. And Hide, thank you very much. Hide Oba, you, you're breath of fresh air, and it's really good to talk to you. We should do some other things together as well. So as we go forward, we'll, I'm sure, reconnect on this podcast, because there's so much we need to talk about. I do thank you for your time, and thank you for episode 30 about your father, Hajime Oba, who, again, I had the opportunity to work with. And thank you for this opportunity on episode 31 about the lean basics and how your father really influenced you in the basics, right?
Yes.
And although I was very surprised to hear that you had a 5S's own office. So, oh, I didn't say that. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's true.
We'll cut that out of the recording. No.
Yeah.
He's probably looking down at us right now saying, hey, why'd you guys say that? You know?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. God bless you. And I'm sure we'll be hooking up soon and we'll go from there.
Yes, Mark, thank you very much for this opportunity. And like you said, we are passionate about this basic, and I really appreciate this opportunity to talk about it, because a lot of people don't even appreciate that. You know,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah, they ignore it. So
the
thank
pleasure
you very
is mine.
Much.
Yes, thank you. So lean911.com is the website. We're on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the other platforms most likely were out there. And lean911.com, you'll find all the episodes. And please feel free to email me with comments, mark@lean911.com and mark@lean911.com. And again, just one more time, Hide Oba, your consulting firm is called H&M Operations Management and .com.
Yes.
That's correct. Okay. So you'll find him there and talk to him about getting back to basics, because I'm sure, as you can see, he knows a little bit about it. So,
at least I'm passionate about it.
You really are passionate, and so am I. And that's something we got to leave our generations forward to keep thinking about. So, thank you very much. I do appreciate this.
Thank you very much, sir.
You bet. Bye bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.